Beis, Amud Beis, nine lines up from the bottom. In the Mishnah, back on Daf Ayin Tes Amud Beis, we learned that Ein Megadlim Chazirim Bechol Makom. That Gidul Chazirim, to raise Chazirim and sell them, that's your business, that's prohibited. Tana Rabbanan, we learned in a Braisa, and this Braisa is going to give us a little bit of historical background that led up to this institution, this establishing an Isur about Chazirim, by Gidul Chazirim, and we're talking about the period of Bayis Sheni, and you will recall that the Chashmonaim rose up to rebel against the Yevanim, and at some point they took the Melucha, after Hanukkah, you remember, and the Malchus B'Yisrael continued from the year 214 until the year 317 of the Binyan HaBayis. And during that period, there was Malchus B'Yisrael, but there were two brothers, Hyrcanus and Aristobulus, that had a major battle, a civil war of sorts, between two segments of the Chashmonaim, of the base Chashmonaim. Now these two brothers were children of Alexander, who was called Hyrcanus Vinoy. Alexander ben Yochanan ben Shimon ben Matisyo HaKohen. So we're talking a number of generations after Hanukkah, after Matisyo. And when their father Alexander died, the Malchus was given over to the mother of these two men as a Malka, as a queen. And at the end of her days, Hyrcanus, the Kohen Gadol in Yerushalayim, took over the kingship. And then Aristobulus came to battle against him. At some point they had a contractual bris shalom, some sort of peace agreement. But after a number of years, that peace agreement did not hold up. And again, a battle broke out, as we'll see in this braisa. The braisa describes that kishetzaru, Tana Rabbana, kishetzaru, Beis Chashmonai Zel Zeh, when the kings of the Beis Chashmonai were sieging, there was a siege in this battle. Hoya Hyrcanus Mibifnim, Hyrcanus, who at that point was the Melech, he was inside in Yerushalayim, and Aristobulus was Mibachutz, was creating a siege from the outside of Yerushalayim. And he, Aristobulus, did something that's totally unthinkable. And that is that he hired the Romans, a legion of Roman soldiers, to help him to conquer Yerushalayim. Again, keep in mind, the Mikdash is still standing. The Rambam writes in Hilchos Chanukah that the Mikdash stood for two centuries following the Nes of Chanukah. Uvechol yom, Hoyu Mishalshlin Lahem Bikupa Dinarim. There was some sort of a working relationship here as far as keeping the Migdash going, because as a result of the siege, it was impossible for those under the dominion of Hyrcanus inside Yerushalayim, inside within the walls of Yerushalayim, to bring a carbon tumid. They didn't have access to the animals that had to be brought. But what they did have is access to the money of the Trumas Halishka. Now the halacha is that when you buy kvasim for the purpose of a carbon tumid, which is a carbon sibur, the monies that go towards that purchase have to come from the Trumas Halishka, which was money that was collected usually around Adar time, and that was used to purchase any carbon sibur. And now we're talking about the carbon tamid. The carbon tamid was still being brought in the Beis HaMikdash. And how is this implemented? The people of Hyrcanus would send to the other side of the Choma with a sort of like a pulley system. They would put into a coupa money from the Trumas HaLishkan on a daily basis the members of Aristobulus who were on the outside of Yerushalayim would take these monies and they would purchase kvasim for the purpose of the bringing of the Korban Tumah so that the Mikdash could continue to function. In other words, at this point in time, Aristobulus, despite all his despicable actions, was still eager to have the Mikdash up and running. And again, at this point, they did not foresee the destruction of the Beis HaMikdash. Now again, as I mentioned before, the month of Adar, that's the month of Shkolim, of collecting the monies for the Trumas HaLishka. The Trumas HaLishka was the monies that were earmarked to purchase a Korban Tzibur. An animal that was bought from private monies could not be designated for a Korban Tzibur and could not become a Korban Tumah. And now we get to the tragic part of this episode. Hayasham in Yerushalayim, under Hyrcanus, there was an individual named, we don't know his name, but he was a Zakin Echad. And again, I don't know exactly what the word Zakin means in this context. Apparently, he was a wise person, Zikna is Chachma. Shaya Makir b'Chachma Yevanis, he was able to communicate in a secret kind of language, which is called the language of Chachma, the Greek wisdom. And that language had all sorts of words that were Ramazim. Ramazim means it was a secret language that used sort of metaphors, and only those who were well trained in that language would understand that language. Rashi explains a little bit later on in Pei Gimel that the members of the kingly court of Rome knew that language, and certainly the Greeks. It was a very esoteric language that was used only by the aristocracy and the highest echelons of political government. But this Zakein was an expert in that language. And he was of the opinion that this was the time that the Malchus of Hyrcanus should collapse, and those who sieged from the outside, from Aristobulus, would take over. That was his agenda. We don't know exactly why. Amar Lahem. And he, this Zakein, told those who are on the outside, using again Lashon Yevanis, so those who were around him could not understand what he was saying, he sent this secret message, again verbally, to tell them, if they want to take over Yerushalayim, here's the key. As long as those on the inside in Yerushalayim under Hyrcanus are implementing on a daily basis the avoda, the continuing the avoda, the Mikdash is up and running, then you will not be able to conquer them. You will not be able through your siege to successfully overtake Yerushalayim. If you want to do so and that's your job, that's your agenda, then you know what? You should stop this business of giving, of supplying karbanos of kvasim for the Tamid, and as a result, you will succeed in your battle against those who occupy Yerushalayim at this point. But he gave the secret plan. He revealed the secret to the enemies on the outside. And in fact, that's exactly what they did. They decided not to send kvasim for the karbanos tzibur, and that would be the way they could take over Yerushalayim. L'machar shilshalu dinrim b'kupa, when those on the inside sent out in this kupa the monies of the Trumas HaLishka, helulahem, those on the outside sent them a chazir. Instead of sending kvasim, they sent them a chazir. And the Yerushalmi understands that there is some sort of symbolic meaning in the chazir, because David HaMelech seems to assume in Tehillim that the Chazir is a symbol of Rome, of Edom, Malchus Edom. And the remez that they were sending the Mibifnim people was that they shouldn't battle against them, and the war effort was just a meaningless endeavor, because no matter what's going to happen, Edom is going to Edom that's Nimshal Lechazir will come and destroy the Beis Hamikdash. And David HaMelech said in Tehillim Kuf Lamed Zayin, Zechor Hashem Levnei Edom Es Yom Yerushalayim Homrim Arur Aru Aru Al Ad HaYisod Ba, meaning that the Bnei Edom will have their Yom Yerushalayim, not our Yom Yerushalayim as we know it in Chof Chazir, but the exact opposite. Their Yom Yerushalayim will mean the total destruction of Yerushalayim down to its Yisod, down to its foundations, to make it completely desolate. And at the end, of course, Titus was able to break through the wall around Yerushalayim and ultimately destroy the Beis HaMikdash. All this is being symbolized by a message to them with the Chazir. Kevan Sheigia Lechatzi HaChoma. Again, they had to lift up the Chazir to carry him over the walls of Yerushalayim. Again, they didn't know at this point, those who were carrying him and dragging him, that it was a Chazir. Maybe they got the message somewhere along the way. But halfway up the height of this famous wall that circled around Yerushalayim, Not Tziparnov Bachoma. The Chazir is used to taking its hooves and digging them in this case, to the Choma. And the Choma, again, defined Kedushas Yerushalayim. Anything Bifnim was sanctified with the sanctity of Yerushalayim. So here we have a Chazir representing Rome, in effect, digging their claws into that very Choma that represents Kedushas Yerushalayim. And that sent shockwaves through the land of Israel, indicating that the Romans would take over. V'nizdaza Eretz Yisrael Arbamios Parsal Arbamios Parsa. The entire land was like an earthquake, because the Midah of Eretz Yisrael is called Arbamios Parsal Arbamios Parsa. Yerushalayim is located exactly in the middle of Eretz Yisrael, like the stomach or the belly button is in the middle of the body. And if you give a person a whack in that belly button, his entire body shakes. And so too, when Yerushalayim was given this makah, this terrible patch of the Chazir digging its claws into the walls of Kedushas Yerushalayim, the entire Eretz Yisrael shook, like when you hit someone in the belly button. And this is a remez, this is all an allusion to the fact that the Romans were brought now by the people of Aristobulus to fight and conquer Yerushalayim, and the gzeirah of Churban Eretz Yisrael was signed and sealed through this symbolic, metaphorical act of the Chazir representing Rome digging its claws into the walls that surrounded Yerushalayim. And this is all a result, as Rashi says in Masechta Sota, of the kas of Hashem, divine wrath, on the Chil Shem Shamayim that was caused at this moment by the Jewish people who sent this Chazir, which meant that the Karban Tamid could no longer be brought. The Yerushalmi says that the day that this entire episode took place was Yudzayin B'Tammuz. And we know that amongst the various terrible tragedies, catastrophes that befell the people of Israel on the 17th of Tammuz, one of them was Bittul HaTamid. And that's the beginning, really, of the Churban HaBayis. The Tamid, which Kishmo Kenu, was brought continuously daily since the Mikdash was established, was now terminated. Ubioso Shah Amru the Chacham declared at that hour, at that moment, Orur Ha'ish Shi'igadil Chazirim. In other words, since this story of the beginning of the end of the Beis HaMikdash was a result of the Chazir. Therefore, the Arur, the curse, was instituted for he who raises Chazirim. Now, the question is as follows. The Mishnah in Shviyas in the 7th Perek establishes that we don't do business with any non-kosher food. B'chol balit chayim tmeim asur lischar. And the question is, how do we reconcile this Gemara, which establishes an aura specifically for raising the chazir, amongst which is one of many, many different non-kosher animals? And the answer is that if you're raising a non-kosher animal for the purpose of achila, it's going to be sold as an edible, as meat, then it's prohibited. But let's say, for example, you want to raise non-kosher animals for the purpose of their hides, or for the purpose of their hides, meaning to take oil and whatever process they did in the tanning process to prepare the hides as oros, as leather straps and so forth and so on, then the Yerushalmi at least establishes, and we assume that that's la halacha, that you're allowed to do business with susim, chamorim, and other non-kosher animals that are not omid l'achila. And chazirim, according to this gemara that we're learning now, the iser that was instituted, the arur, would encompass even prohibit even raising chazirim, not for achila, but for other purposes, to use other parts of the body. And that's what you'll find in Tosfos Divrei Maaseh Yigdal. However, the Rashba gives an alternative answer as far as other non-kosher animals. If you happen to chance upon them, you're allowed to raise them and sell them. And you sell them, of course, to a non-Jew. As far as the chazir is concerned, if it happens that you inherit or you're given a whole herd of swine, then the Mishnah, the halacha that we learned earlier, daf pei, doesn't require you to sell them all in one fell swoop. That's going to lower the price. But rather you sell them ma'at ma'at, piecemeal. But you're not allowed to hold on to these animals in order to make a livelihood, to make profit from them. When I say these animals, I mean the swine. And Tosfos in Pesachim adds that in the case of Chazirim, there is not only an Iser, a prohibition of raising the Chazirim for professional and monetary purposes, but there's also this Oror that was added in the case of the Chazir. So again, what was the Gemara adding here to the universal halach that applies to non-kosher animals? Number one, the Iser is all-encompassing, includes even the chazir for the sake of different parts of its body that are mutar b'hanah, not for selling it as bacon, as ham, on the market for eating. And secondly, this applies even if you happen to chance upon these animals, as you didn't go actively seeking out these animals for purpose of business, but you inherited them, it was bequeathed to you by a guy, let's say, for example. Nevertheless, you're not supposed to hold on to them for purpose of making money. You just have to sell them off one by one. And finally, in the case of Chazir, an Arur was added. And the Arur indicates, I believe, a special Averis HaGavra. It upgrades the level of the violation here. It's not just a general violation of Mitzvah L'shmol L'divrei Chachamim, that the Chachamim, the Torah invests authority in the Chachamim, and if you violate their will, then you're over on an Issa D'Rabbanan fine. But the Arur adds another dimension to the Avera, and we'll see throughout the Torah that certain Arurs will be added for Averas. The Torah wants to upgrade the severity of the Avera. Getting back now to our Braisa, the Braisa establishes Arur Ha'odam V'Arur Ha'odam Shi'alamed Espiro Chachma Yivanis. After all, the Zaken use this medium called Chachma Yevanis to communicate this terrible method of destroying, of bringing about the destruction of Yerushalayim, to communicate that to Aristobulus and his people on the outside. And therefore there was a gzera prohibiting and joining the study of Chachma Yevanis. Now keep in mind that the Meiri has a shita which we're going to see consistently, that the prohibition against Chachma Yevanis is because of the philosophy of the ancient Greeks, which of course was very seductive, and it teaches the undermining of many of the fundamentals of Judaism. I mean, to give one example, the Aristotelian theory of the eternity of the universe is antithetical to our belief, as one of the fundamentals, of the creation of the universe by God. Now, one question we want to ask is, why was it necessary to institute this gzera at the time of Titus, l'chora? Let me just clarify that point. The Gemara in Sota on Daf Mem Tes establishes that at the time of Titus and the conquering of Yerushalayim, that's when this Isur was instituted, prohibiting the study of Chachma Yevanis. When here in our sug, it seems that this Gzera, this Isur, predates Titus by quite a bit of time, at the time of the Chashmonaim. And Tosus answers that originally the Gzera was not accepted at the time of the Chashmonaim, but later on, at the time of Titus and the destruction of the Mikdash, that's when Klal Yisrael were ready to accept this Isur of studying Chachma Yevanis. Tosfos gives another answer, that during the Chashmonaim they did not institute a full-fledged Isur, but rather they discouraged it very heavily, as we saw in the Arur. However, at the time of Titus, they instituted a full-fledged Isur. Again, that has to be understood, but I'm just mentioning it as we go along to reconcile our sugya of Chashmonaim, Bimei Chashmonaim, with the sugya in Sota of Bimei Titus. The Ora Adam Shilamis Menoch Chachmi Yevanis Ve'al Osa Shah Shaninu. The Mishnah says in Menaches, Maise Sheba Omer Miginos Hatsrifin Ushtealechem Ibikas Ein Socher. The Mishnah describes that as a result of sending this chazir and the termination of bringing the Karban Tamid in the Beis HaMikdash, all this was at the hands and as a result of the siege of Aristobulus on Yerushalayim, they were machriv, they destroyed the sados of Tfua, those fields that grew grain in the environs in the radius outside Yerushalayim, and therefore they brought the Omer from places that were very, very far away from Yerushalayim, and they brought the Shtei Lechem again from places that were far, far from Yerushalayim. And of course, the Karban HaOmer, which is a Karban Mincha, it's the first Karban Mincha that's brought from the Tevuah Chadash, from the new crop, on the 16th of Nisan. That Omer, of course, will be matir all the Tevuah Chadasha, and the Karban Shtei Lechem was brought on Chag HaShavuos from the Tevuah Chadasha, and that would be matir bringing Karbanos Menachos on the Mizbeach from the Chodesh, from the new crop. In any event, what happened here is that the beginning of the Churban took place, and that reflected itself in the actual destruction of the areas and the fields in the close environs in the proximity of Yerushalayim. The Gemara now asks the following question: is it really true limud v'limud v'chach mi'ivanis mi'asira, the study of Greek culture, if you will, was prohibited. For Asanya, we have a brisa, Omar Rebbe, and here we're going to turn to Pei Gimel Amud Aleph, the Eretz Yisrael, in the land of Israel, Lashon Sursi Lama. Why do people speak Lashon Sursi, which is a Syrian dialect of Aramaic? Why is that necessary in Eretz Yisrael? O B'Lashon Kodesh, let him speak Lashon Kodesh. Oh, if they're speaking a different language, is Lashon Yevanis. Lashon Yevanis is a much more subtle and precise language, much more fitting of Bali Chachma, of those who have wisdom. V'yomer Rabbi Yossi, in a similar concept, we find in the name of Rabbi Yossi regarding Bavel. Bavel, Lashon Arami Lama. Why did the Jews in Bavel speak Aramaic? Oh, Lashon HaKodesh, let them speak Lashon Kodesh, or if not, Lashon Parsi. Lashon Parsi is again a more subtle language, more precise language, and it's preferable over Aramaic. And the underlying principle here is that if you have the language as it's spoken in its original, it's the vernacular of that country, then you get a more precise language, meaning it's more what we call Lashon Tzacha. In the case of Aramaic, Sursi, which is the dialect of Aramaic spoken in Syria, is not the original. Syria is located borders on Eretz Yisrael. That's already a distance, and the Aramaic is not the real Aramaic. So therefore, don't use Lashon Sursi. If you have to, then use a more sophisticated language, a language that's close to Eretz Yisrael, the language of the Yavanim. Again, Eretz Yisrael is located relatively close to Yavan, and therefore the dialect of Yavanis that would be spoken in Eretz Yisrael was closer to its original. So again, the people in Bavel should not be speaking Parsi, because that's a bastardized language of a dialect of Aramaic, because of the distance between Syria and Paras, where they spoke the original, and Eretz Yisrael, which is closer to Yavan, there they should be speaking Yavanis. So that's where Rabbi Yossi says that in Bavel, they should be speaking the original language, and that's called Lashon Parsi. Lashon Parsi, which is superior to Lashon Arami, would be fitting for the Babylonian Jews, because Bavel was close to Paras, and therefore the dialect of Parsi that was spoken in Bavel, insofar as its proximity to Paras, is the original Parsi, which is a superior language to Aramis. In Eretz Yisrael, on the other hand, the superior language that goes even beyond Parsi is the language of Yavanis, because of the proximity between Eretz Yisrael and Yavan that produced an original form or dialect of Lashon Yavanis. So again, just to take both the statements of Rebbe and Rabbi Yossi into context, and combine them and integrate together into one framework, we should be shooting as Jews for the best superior dialect, unless we're talking Lashon HaKodesh, and for the Jews in Eretz Yisrael, the best way they should be avoiding Lashon Sursi, because the Sursi language is not a real original language. Syria is located some distance from Aram, from the Aramaic language, back in its original form, and therefore better to speak Lashon Yevanis, because Eretz Yisrael, insofar as it's proximate to Yavan, proximity to Yavan, was able to almost imitate the original Lashon Yevanis, which is certainly superior to Sursi. And Rabbi Yossi adds that as far as the Babylonian Jews is concerned, why should they use the Lashon Aramis when they could use the Lashon Parsi? Because the Lashon Parsi is a superior language to Aramis. It's a much more sophisticated language. And since in Bavel, due to their location, they were too far from Yavan to have any access or any interchange in Yavanis, but at least speak a language that's superior to the Aramis, and that is the Lashon Parsi. And Bavel was located close to Paras, so they could certainly get a flavor of the original Parsi. But in any event, we see clearly from the words of Rebbe that there's no prohibition against speaking Yavanis. And if that be the case, again, I don't know why Rav Yossi is quoted here, but Rebbe certainly gives us the basis for this stira to our Braisa, that at the time of the Chashmonaim, they instituted a prohibition against Yavanis. Amri, so the Gemara says, wait a minute, we're not talking about an Isser at the time of the Chashmonaim against the language, but rather against the culture and its philosophy. Amri, Lashon Yevani Lechud, Chachma Yevanis Lechud. The language of Yavan, that is a spoken language by the people itself, and Eretz Yisrael, due to its proximity to Lashon Yevanis, would be able to imitate that language. However, as far as Chachma Yevanis is concerned, that Chachma, which is, as we indicated earlier, the language of those who are in the higher echelons of society, of government, that study of Chachma Yevanis, not the spoken language of the people, the grassroots people, but and the language on the street, but rather the Yevanis of, as we said before, the Mekuravim Lamalchus, that language was included in this Gzera. And we mentioned before the Me'iri Shita. The Me'iri Shita is that Chachma Yevanis here is a reference to the philosophy of the ancient Greeks, and the Bnei Amalchus had a special, those who were high up in the government, they had a special gravitational pull towards Chachma Yevanis. And those who were in the higher echelon of government, as a result of their understanding of Chachma Yevanis, that empowered them, even within the military, stage, and they could succeed on the battlefield even better as a result of this Chachma Yevanis that put them and project them into the higher echelons. But in any event, the Me'iri Shita, as we said before, is that the prohibition against studying Chachma Yevanis is due to the fact that it'll take a Jew off the path of the Yesodei Amuna. The Shita Mekubetz quotes a Ramah in a certain similar vein, and he says Chachma Yevanis has to do with astrology and predicting the future, and there are all sorts of prohibitions involved here. Whereas the Rambam Pirush HaMishnayos understands that the Yevanim, when they wanted, they could speak in Ramazim and Chidos in certain symbolic language, and that's the Chachma Yevanis here. That is not the spoken, as we said, the grassroots citizen spoken vernacular of Yevanis, and this was prohibited. Now the Gemara says, Chachma Yevanis mi asiro, we're going to prove from no less of a person than Rabbi Gamliel that Chachma Yevanis was in fact studied. Va'omar, we have a statement of Rabbi Yudah Meshmuel Mishum Rabbi Shimon ben Gamliel, who used to quote or invoke a pasuk in Eicha to describe his sad, pathetic situation. Eini olola lenafshi mikol benos iri. I should wail and woe and let the eyes, you know, pour, let the water and the tears pour down my eyes in such a way that it will be menavel my eyes. Menavel means it's going to make my eyes look terrible, look disgusting. And why? Mikol benos iri, because of, this is a reference to his mishpacha. And what happened to his mishpacha? He says, Elif yeladim hayu bebeis abba, my father Ram Gamliel had 1,000 offspring, you know, including the next generation of Mishpachas Abba, and it was split into two. Chamesh Meos Alamdu Torah, half, 500 of these 1,000 were dedicated exclusively to the study of Torah. Chamesh Meos Alamdu Chachmi Yevanis were dedicated to study the wisdom of the Yevanim. V'lo Nishtayr Mehem Elani Kan Uben Achi Abba Be'Asya. And from all these 1,000, the only ones who survived the Churban were me here in Eretz Yisrael and a cousin of mine, the son of my uncle, in a place called Asya, which is a location in Chutz Laretz. But in any event, we see clearly that in the house of Rav Gamliel, they studied Chachma Yevanis. Now, getting back for a moment to the pasuk in Eicha, which Rav Shimon Gamliel quotes here in his lamentation, in its original, that pasuk, of course, authored by Yirmiyo, was a lament over the mishpach of Yirmiyo. The mishpach of Yirmiyo was a mishpach of Kohanim. Eini olol olenafshi, which again refers to the nevel of the eyes because of the dimma, was a result, says Yirmiyo, of the fact that he was boche on Bnei Iri, meaning on Mishpachti, because that Mishpach was a Mishpach of Kohanim, and they were chosen for Avodas Hashem in the Beis HaMikdash, and the Beis HaMikdash was destroyed. And Rav Shimon Gamliel is using this symbolically to indicate his lament over the family of Rav Gamliel, his father. 998 out of 1,000 perished in the Churban HaBayis, and therefore my eyes weep in such a way that there's a nevel of my eyes. Now again, the fact that half of Rabbi Gamliel's tribe and descendants were dedicated to the study of Chachmi Yevanis, does that really prove that it was something that was acceptable? And the answer must be that Rabbi Shimon Gamliel and of course his entire family, all his cousins, were dedicated to Yiras Hashem, and they were certainly upholding the law. Rabbi Gamliel was the Nasi. He would not allow and permit his children and his descendants to violate this Isser of studying Chachma Yevanis. So how could it be? Are you really insisting that there was an Isser that was established to prohibit the study of Chachma Yevanis? Amri, the Gemara answers, Shani Beis Rav Gamliel, there was a special matir in the case of the house of Rav Gamliel, Shayu Krovim Lamalchus, they had to have a constant interchange with the kingship, with those who are in the higher echelons of political control, and in order to have the entryway into those circles of the political echelon, higher echelon, they needed to master Chachma Yevanis. And basically what we're saying here is that there's a heter to study Chachma Yevanis in order to be able to have a close contact with those who were in the Malchus, the Meiri again, who understood that the problem of Chachma Yevanis is the Yesodei Amuna, that the study of Chachma Yevanis would undermine the fundamentals of the Torah. And the answer is that with regard to the Bnei Rav Gamliel, who was, they were Molei Kreisam Bebosav Yayin of Torah and its fundamentals, and they were Mekurovim LaMalchus, there was no fear that through the study of Chachma Yevanis they would undermine Chas Shalom their belief and dedication to the Yesodei Amuna. But on the contrary, with their study of Chachmei Yevanis, they were able to accomplish two goals: a close relationship to the Malchus, and also to combat the influence of the philosophy of the ancient Greeks. And because they understood that philosophy, they were able to strengthen the Das Yisrael by countering against this very seductive philosophy. Ukidasanya, we learned in a Braisa, Hamasaper Komi, we're talking about certain kinds of haircuts that were very popular amongst the idol worshippers, the Ovdei Avodah Zarah. One is called Komi, a tispora is called Komi, where the hairs up front were cut in a certain way on the forehead, and there was a bluris, a kind of ponytail that was left behind. And we're talking now about a violation, if a Jew would cut his hair in that way, of the Isra, B'chukoseyam, Lo Selechu, is HaReza Midarche HaEmori. This would be an imitation of Darche HaEmori for a Jew to do such a thing and cut his hair in that way, and a violation of B'chukoseyam, Lo Selechu. And the simple understanding of this Gemara means Chukos Akum, any statute, any mandate amongst the idol worshippers is a kind of worship of an idol, even if it includes and extends to the tisporis, the kind of haircuts that also is called a chok l'avodah zarah, and a Jew is not allowed to cut his hair in that way. In this special matir regarding b'chukoseyam lo selechu, in this type of haircut, is recorded by the Gemara in the Braisa that we started, Hamasaper Komi HaReza Midarche HaMori Av Tulmus Bar Ruven. There's a little bit of question what his name was, but in any event, he Tirilo Lesaper Kumi Mipneshu Karav LaMalchus. And that heta was given in order for this Jew to have an impact on the Malchus. And Tosfos here quotes a Gemara Me'ila that in turn records a story about the Gzera of the Malchus that prohibited, enjoined the Jewish people from observing Shabbos and Mila and Nida. And this fellow, we'll call him Avtulmus, although maybe his name was Ruvain, we're not sure, he took this haircut, disguised himself as an Eino Yehudi, and he somehow got access to the higher echelons of the government, and he argued against this gzera of Shabbos, Mila, and Nida. And he gave them a mashal. He says, if you have an enemy, do you want him to be poor? Do you want him to be rich? They said, of course we want him to be poor. So let the Jewish people observe the Shabbos. They'll get poor as a result. And they accepted him, and they nulled and voided that gzera of Shabbos. Then he again asked them, if you have an enemy, do you want him to be healthy or do you want him to be weak? Amru lo yakhish, of course we want him to be weak. So then let them institute Mila on a baby that's 8 days old, and that'll certainly make them weak. And they again accepted it, and they completely undermined that gzera of Isur Mila. Now, they asked him, Avtulmus asked the Romans, he said, if you have an enemy, do you want him to have many children and propagate, or do you want him to have less children so that he diminishes his numbers? And of course they said, we'd rather you smite. So they said, let them observe the mitzvah of their command of Nida, and they won't have relations with their wives for a certain significant time of the year, and that'll decrease their procreation. And they respond, that's a good idea. And as a result, they were mevatel, the gzera of Nida. And all this was because of the special heter of this Jew to disguise himself by taking this strange haircut that would project him and give him access to the governmental authorities. The Rambam paskins in the 11th perek of Avodah Zarah that for the sake of Yisrael is Karv LaMalchus, and he has to sit in front of the kings of the nations, and it's a gnai, it's not acceptable in their eyes. If he doesn't look like them, he's allowed to take a giluach, to shave himself in a way that they do it, and present himself the way they do it, and the Kesef Mishnah is bothered by that. How could the Chacham be matir in Isur Dorais of Chukas HaGoyim? And there are a number of answers to this question. We'll mention three of them. Number one, that we have to be matir this Isur Dorais for the sake of the goal of being Mevatil Gzeros Roos Mi Yisrael, for the sake of Hatzolus Klal Yisrael. The second answer offered by the Kesef Mishnah is that the Torah never specifies exactly what's included under Chukas HaGoyim, which pu'ulos are enjoined, and the authority was invested in the Chachamim to define the parameters of this Isur, when it applies, when it does not, and they decided not to institute the Isur on this Tisporus called Kumi, upon those who are close to the Malchus. And the Bach gives an answer that according to the Torah law, it's prohibited to deliberately try to imitate the Goyim and present yourself like the Goyim, like these Ovdei Avodah Zarah. But if he's doing it not for the sake of trying to imitate them, Lizdamos Lahem, but rather he's doing it in order that they should not be Mizgana on him, they shouldn't have a negative feeling about him, and he should be able to be makuriv to them, then such behavior is permitted. And in the case of Rabbi Gamliel decided to permit that isur of Chachmi Yevonis in order to achieve this goal of being Krovim Lamalchus. And when you read this Brisa at the first reading, you get the impression that for the sake of Altumus, they were Matir, Sipur, Tisporus Kumi. For the sake of the base Ram Gamliel, they were Matir, Chochma Yevonis. But the truth is that, as Tosus points out, all these Isurim were Mutter for Krovim Lamalchus. But just that Avtulmus needed the heter for Tisporus in terms of the contribution he could make for Atzolus Klal Yisrael, and Beis Rami Gamliel needed their heter of Chochma Yevonis in order to achieve their goal of being Krovim Lamalchus. And it means that whatever is necessary within these parameters to permit these Isurim for the sake of Krov Lamalchus, that became permissible. In Shita Megubetzes, he says that you shouldn't take the language hitiru in this brisa literally. It's not that they were matir, because I don't know if a bezdin can be matir in Issa that was instituted, established by an earlier bezdin. There are all sorts of rules about that in the Sugyan Beitza. Ein bezdin echad yochel levatos bezdin chaverim ken gadol mimena b'chochma minyan. This is a mission also in Edios. How then can you understand the Hitiru? And he reinterprets it. He says, L'chatchila, there was never an Isur that was formulated and imposed upon the Krovim Lamalchus. Getting back to our mission on Ayin Tesam in Basil, Yigadil Adam Es HaKelev Elim Kain Kosher B'Shal Shalos. A very strict Isur, and we'll soon see that it has an aura as well, in joining us from raising these animals that could wreak havoc. Tana Rabbana, we learned in a Braisel, Yigadol Adam Es HaKelev, it means that a Kelev bites, he has rabies, he has a loud bark, and he scares people, he alarms them. I had that experience just about 2 months ago. I mean, I don't know if I lost a couple of years of my life. This dog was ferocious. I thought it was going to just pounce upon me. It turns out that the owner of the dog, a woman, this is on a street called Yeshua Ben Nun, a woman had some sort, the owner of the dog had some sort of an electrical shock that she gave to the dog by pressing on something. And I actually saw the light go on near the dog's mouth. Not only that, the fear and the shock of a loud dog that starts barking might cause a pregnant woman to actually lose her fetus. The fetus inside the womb of a mother is considered in halacha to be in a very precarious, a very shaky and sensitive position. And certain things that frighten the mother can really bring about, rachmanu litzlan, the death of the fetus. Elim came, the only heter to raise such a dog is kosher b'shalsheles. It means, as the Torah says in Shulchan Aruch, shemish v'tof tes, to be tied down literally with metal, a metal chain. Avel megadel hu be'ir hasmucha l'sfar. What they excluded from this Iser of Gidol Klavim are, shall we say, police dogs or watchdogs in a city that's on the boundary between Eretz Yisrael and the Goyim. Because at that boundary line, we have to know if the enemies are attacking us. We need forewarning. And let's say we're living, the Jewish people are in a walled city. They don't know if these Goyim, who are nearby in adjacent town, are planning an attack. And these kinds of klovim that are trained as police dogs, as shmira dogs, are able to help in protecting the city. So for the sake of the security of the city against the non-Jewish enemies, they allowed raising these dogs, kosher bayom, during the day when the enemies would not attack. They would wait till nightfall, and covered by the darkness of nightfall, they would attack the Jewish people. During the daytime, you would have to chain the dog. But umatir balayla, but at night they would allow these dogs to roam freely and do and supply the shmira that was necessary to protect us against the goyim who might suddenly attack us. And when these dogs were doing their rounds outside those city limits, they were able to smell the enemies from a distance. They would raise their voices with loud barks, and they would awaken the citizens, the members of the city, of the Jewish city, awaken them from their sleep. And at that point, the Jews would take arms and climb up the walls in order to do battle against their enemies. And now we have a brisa that expands our understanding of this prohibition of raising dogs if they're not tied down with lock and chain, metal chains. Tanya, we learned in a brisa, Rabbi Eliezer Agodol Omer, Hamagadel Klovim, Kimagadel Chazirim, that one who violates this Takanas Chachamim and raises dogs that are not chained down has the same status as one who violates the Isur against raising pigs. Lamainaf community, the Gemara says, what did Rabbi Eliezer Agodol have to teach me this? You've already established, the Tanakhama has already established, that you're not allowed to raise these dogs. Why do you have to compare them to raising chazirim? And the Gemara answers, this is what Rabbi Eliezer wanted to add, lemekim ale bi'or, to add a very strict, harsh element, a stringency to this Iser, giving it much more teeth, to upgrade the violation of this Iser of raising dogs, like raising chazirim with an arur. And that aura, as we said before, converts and transforms the Averis HaGavra into a very severe violation of violating an Arur, and the consequences of violating this Arur are very severe. Omer Rabbi Yossi Bar Nimoni, Omer Rav Nachman, Bovel Ki'ir Hasmucha L'Sfar Dami. In other words, there are Jewish neighborhoods in Bovel, and they had to be protected from the Goyim, and even though we're not talking about a smuchel, a sfar situation, we're not talking about a city or an area that's located on on the outside boundary of a Jewish community, but literally within the Jewish community itself, within the neighborhood, is Rav Nachman says that even in Chutz Laretz, and even in a place which is not smucha l'sfar, nevertheless, we're allowed to raise these police dogs, these watchdogs, in Bavel, in order to protect ourselves from the enemies. Tirgama Naharda, and Rav Yosef Bar Minyoma explains that Rav Nachman's statement in Bavel was a reference to the city of Narda, which had a large, not only a large Jewish population, but in that vicinity there were many, many goyim, and therefore, even though it's technically not smucha l'sfar, it's not on the borderline of any, in any sense, but nevertheless, the goyim are smuchim, the goyim now are very close to the Jewish neighborhood where the Jews live, and therefore, that gives us the status of ir hasmucha l'sfar. Dorish Rav Dostoy Demin Biri. Now we're talking about the Arona Bris, which, if you recall, in Parshas Baloscha would accompany the Jewish people through the desert and enter into Eretz Yisrael to conquer the seven nations. And the Pasuk says, Uvenucha Yomar Shuv Hashem Rivvos Alfei Yisrael, which means that we're talking about Shuva Hashem, which means the Hashras Hashchina, and we're talking about Rivavos Alfei Yisrael. Rivavos are tens of thousands, and Alfei Yisrael, of course, are thousands. And we're talking about the Hashras Hashchina that's necessary for the Kedushas HaMikdash, Kedushas HaMishkan, back in the Midbar. And, of course, the Hashras Hashchina that's necessary for Nevuah, for prophecy. And for this we need 22,000 Jews. That's the presence, that's the population. It's Nes Landucha Shein Hashchina Shoral Yisrael Pachos Mishnei Alofim Ushnei Rivavos. 22,000 becomes the magic number. Normally we say that the Shechina is Shorah B'Yisrael with 10 Jews. That's how we have a Dovash of Kedusha. But now we're talking about a higher level. We're talking about Hashras Hashchina for Nevuah, for the Kedushas HaMikdash, HaMishkan. And for this, we need the presence of 22,000 Jews. Now, what is this number 22,000, and how do we derive it? How do we arrive at it? And the Shita Megubetzes says that Shnei Alofim Rivavos is not, again, this is a different girsa, it's not 22,000, but it's 2 million. And how is that so? Because if you take 2,000, multiply 2,000 by 10,000, you arrive at 2 million. The only question is, how do we accept the Shita Megubetzes? We know that the population of Jewish people was 600,000 shishim ribui, but the answer is if you add the women folk, because again the 600,000 only represents those who are above 20 and younger than 60 and males. They were the giborim that would go out to war, but if you add all the rest of the male folk, the younger ones and the older ones, and you add the women and the children, you end up with not shishim ribui 600,000, but with 2 million. And we need that, you know, Rivos Alfei Yisrael in order to engender the Shechina, and that is the number 2 million. However, according to our Girsa, it's not 2 million, it's 22,000. What is the significance of the number 22,000? And this we see again in the Shita Megubetzes, that the number 22,000 represents the minion of Levim, the counting of Levim, Miben Chodesh V'mala Bamidbar. And for that you'll see at the beginning of Sefer Bamidbar, Perek Gimel Pasuk Lamed Tes, that number 22,000. And then the Shita writes, Ubimechitzas HaLevim, within the group, I don't know what word to use, but the group of the Levim, that's where Shars Hashchina V'Aron Bris Hashem, and that's the number 22,000. The Bali Kabbalah speak about the parallelism, the mirror image between Malchus down here on earth and Malchus Shamayim up in the heavens, and there the Kisei HaKavod is surrounded by 22,000 Malachim, Sarim, sorry, Mala, and again that's an indication of Hashras Hashchina. And then it says, Chaser Achas, if one of these 22,000 is missing,
And we're going to see that that deficiency, that loss, is a result of the fact that somebody raised a wild dog, a rabid dog, a dangerous dog, is enom ruuyim lashos hashchina. Now imagine the case, ha'isa isha buberes beinayim ruuyim lahashlim. A woman is carrying a fetus that will be the last in the number 22,000. And that fetus, once it's born, will bring the shechina. V'novach ba'kelef. But as a result of this sudden shock of the loud bark of this very ferocious dog, v'ipila, she lost the fetus, Rachman al-Litzan, is Nimtza Zed Bal Kelev, now Gorem L'Shechina Shetestalik Mi'Yisrael. Not only did he cause the death of the fetus, but he also caused Siluk Shechina. And there's no Shechina. And the Gemara has in mind a specific action or episode that took place in history. Ahi Issa, the Olas L'Meifa Bahu Besa, a woman went into a certain house in order to bake, Novach ba kalba, and somebody had this wild dog that started barking in a frightening her in a loud voice. Amalei Mare, so the owner of the dog said, Lo tistifi mine, please, don't, I see you're in a state of shock and fear, there's nothing to worry about. She came, why shkule nive, I took out his dangerous front teeth, the longer teeth, and I had them extracted. And therefore there's nothing to be afraid of. Amrolei, so the woman said to the owner of the dog, Shkilei tivusach, you know what, take away this tova that you did for me, this benefit act of taking out the teeth, the dangerous teeth of the kelev, of the dog. That tova is worthless. Why? Shadya achizrei, throw it into the coats and throw it out into the rubbish. It's not worth it. It doesn't do me any good. Kvar nod vlad. I didn't know. You didn't give me the forewarning. And the dog already did what it did. I was in a state of shock. I was overwhelmed by fear. The vlad, the fetus in my body, moved around. And as a result, it died. And this teaches us the severity, demonstrates the severity of this prohibition to raise dogs that are not tied down, and even if the dog per se might not be so dangerous because you've extracted those long teeth and it cannot damage, therefore, but nevertheless, we still have to worry about the fact that some woman who's pregnant might see this dog. She doesn't know anything about the fact that its teeth were removed, and she might lose the vlad. The Gemara goes on now to study another part of the Mishnah, in Parsin, Nishbin Leonim. Within a certain proximity of the Yishuv, we are enjoined from setting up traps to trap these dove birds. And the reason for that is because there are privately owned doves that are flying through the airspace in the city, in the urban areas, and you're stealing. And how far out of the city, how far do you have to distance yourself from the city to allow setting up these traps? And the answer is, says the Gemara, says the Mishnah, Shloshim Ris, which Rashi, back on Daf Ayin Testament Beis, identifies as Arba Milin. Again, there are other shitas here that it's not four milim, but Riss is, according to the Shidim Ukbetz, the name of Rabbeinu Yonasan, is Masayim Veshivim Amma. Ah, and you multiply 270 Amma, which is a Riss, by 30 to get 30 Riss, and that turns out to be 4 million plus Mea Amma, another 100 Amma. So Rashi's not using that precise calculation, but in any event, it comes down to more or less the same bottom line of 4 million. The Gemara asks the following question now. Is it really so that it's necessary to assume that outside the city limits you might be trapping Yenim's Yonim, his Yonim, and stealing them because the Yonim are flying around 4 milin outside the city? Umi Azli Kuli Hai, I have a Mishnah in Babasa which will indicate that the flight of the dove is not, you know, the extended area is not 4 milim. Plus, now we learned in the Mishnah, Achikim es ha-shovach min ha-ir chamishim ama. In other words, the maximum amount of flight outside the city limits of the doves is 50 ama. Now, that's a Mishnah that addresses harchokas nezikin, which means that I'm not allowed to do something in close proximity to the city or to my neighbor which will cause damage. Here, we're talking about the gardens, the vegetable gardens, etc., within the city, and these birds, if they're too close to the city, will pounce, will swoop down from the heavens and ruin the planting, the vegetables of the planting, the zroim. So our chokas nezikim requires that we set up our shovchim at a distance, at a minimum distance of 50 amma outside the city limits. Because again, once it's that far away, the yonim will not fly into the city and destroy the ginos of the city. In any event, our Mishnah talks about the shear of Shloshim Ris, which is a lot longer of a distance than 50 amma. In fact, if you calculate it, it's about 8,000 amma. Because Shloshim Ris is 4 milim, a mil is 2,000 amma, 4 times 2 is 8,000 amma, as opposed to 50 amma, the Mishnah of Harchokas Nezikin and Bava Basra. Now again, why is this Tvua subject to such damage by the birds? And the answer is, what they used to do is, their minig was to take the Tvua, which when it was cut down, it was very wet and moist, and they used to spread it out on the rooftops in order for the sun to dry them, and that's when the birds would have a heyday, pouncing down upon these garine tvua. But again, as long as the birds are 50 amar distance from the city, we don't have to worry about that. Amar Abaye, and here we have a whole psychology of doves, meshat shaiti tuva. In fact, the doves can fly a lot further than the limited distance of 50 amma. And if, again, you're not allowed to put out your traps within a distance of 8,000 amma of the city, because the birds that you're going to trap don't belong to you, they belong to the yishuv. But krasayu bechamishim amma malya, they fill up their bellies, and as when they're looking for food, the doves will collect within a shear of 50 amma. In other words, once you're marchik 50 amma from the city, they're not going to eat from the ginos of the members of the city. And therefore, it's sufficient to be machik yoshova from the city in order to avoid achokas nezikin 50 amma. But when you're talking about doves flying around outside the city, and those are privately owned doves, we need to distance ourselves as much as 8,000 amma, as much as 4 mil, and each meal is 2,000 amma. The Gemara doesn't like this answer of Abaye. Umeshat shloshim ris, are you telling me that the flight of the dove is up to 30 risks of 8,000 amma? With all the respect, Vesu Lo, is it true that the doves don't fly a longer distance? Vasanya, we learned it a brisa. Vasanya, don't we have a brisa that says if a person wants to set up his mitsudos, the yishuv is afilu mea mil o yifros, 100 mil, in other words, according to this brisa, when we're afraid that maybe you will have grabbed on to someone else's yonim, you have to be marchik 100 mil. Is Rav Yosef Omar b'yishuv kramim? According to Rav Yosef's answer, it depends what we're talking about. Are we talking about a makom miyushav b'kramim? And there's a pricha from the kerem to kerem that gives the projectile of the bird, you know, jumping from one vine to the other, one vineyard to the other, an extended distance.
Or are we talking about a regular yishuv, not a yishuv kramim? And therefore, it's enough to be marchik shloshim ris. Rabba Amar, Rabba, it gives a different answer, b'yishuv shovchim. That we're talking about an area where there are many shovchim, many of these coops, these dove coops, and there are plenty of places for the yonim to rest, and therefore that gives them the projectile, the energy to go even more than 100 mil. So the Gemara asks a question on Rabba, if you're telling me that the Braisa prohibits these mitsudos because of the proximity to the city, tepekle mishum shovchim gufayhu, there should be an Iser here, because since the makom is miyushav shovchim, then we have to already be choshesh that the mitsudos, these traps, will take over. You know, they'll grab and they'll attract yonim, doves, from the shovchim. You're talking about a yishuv shovchim. So how can you possibly forget about the flight of the yonim? Just talk about the shovchim themselves. How could one shovach encroach upon the area of another shovach in close proximity? It's going to be stealing these yonim. Ibai Sayyid Gmar gives one answer, Bidaovde Kochovim. The Shovchim belong to non-Jews, and therefore on that basis we're not going to create an Iser of Prishas Hamitsudos. The Iser of Yone Air Shanochim Bishovcha Nochrim doesn't apply. And the other answer is Ibai's Ema, we're talking about what kind of Shovchim Bide Hefker, that no longer is there private ownership over the shovchim. Ibai Samir, the third answer is bididei, that in the yishuv of shovchim, which include shovchim sheshayich liatzmo, is there, there's a heter to be located the yonim because they're his yonim. However, to set up these traps, that is a problem because of the yoni yishuv that fly at a distance around the city. Hadron Alecha, Perek Merudah.